Our gospel lesson for this morning is from Matthew 10, verses 40 through 42. Jesus said, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. Those who receive you also receive me," is Jesus' blessing after a chapter of hard sayings concerning the life of discipleship that includes these words: "If you do not take up your cross, you are not worthy of me. Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill your soul." In this chapter, we learn that the road for the disciple is hard and dangerous and lonely. But then this lovely assurance, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. You will not lose your reward." Now, I am quite taken by the words of Drake Howard that I had printed in part on the front of your bulletin. "The more extravagant the welcome," he writes, "the greater the refreshment, the deeper the grounding, the clearer the enlightenment, the stronger the inspiration that will flow from it. The welcome must be extravagant in sincerity and persistence. Jesus lived in a place of welcome that traveled with him wherever he went." This is central to what it means, I think, when he says you will not lose your reward. So let us dwell here for a little while. One of the workshops that I attended 2 weeks ago at the Central Pennsylvania Conference of the United Church of Christ was for churches that were going through the open and affirming process. It was to help them grow their welcome. The first vote at that church was so close that the church decided not to go ahead with being open and affirming. But over the next 3 years, proponents kept on encouraging the church to make this commitment, which it finally did. Here's what this man had to say about his church. "You have to grow up. You have to grow up in faith. You have to grow bigger and more elastic inside. You have to grow a spirituality big enough to welcome and consider concerns other than your own." I love this. You have to grow that welcome, that roominess inside yourself. You have to grow that big inner home place. You have to grow the house with many mansions inside. You have to grow up, and you have to grow big enough so that Jesus can fit, so you can take him with you when you meet up with those to whom you have been sent. And the man from the Pennsylvania Conference testified that it took his Susquehanna church 3 years to grow like that, to grow a place for Jesus and for everyone for whom he died. But the man did not stop there. He left that now roomy and welcoming church home to come to that conference meeting to testify to hurting Christians, to offer encouragement to those whose churches had been laid bare by this struggle to welcome LGBTQ people, to become faithful and loving and roomy and open and affirming. He carried that sense of confident welcome with him. A week ago Saturday, I was at a shower for Christine Way. She was the first of the Corinne community to arrive and go to school here. Now, I was asked at the door at the first service, "Who are you talking about? Who are the Corinne community?" They do attend this church at 8:45. They are the Aboriginal people of Burma. They have been severely persecuted both for their ethnic heritage and also because they were converted to Christian faith by Judson. So Christians in the United States have felt a special obligation to help them resettle here. I asked Christine what it was like to be the first. How did it happen for you? She said she arrived in the United States here in Chapel Hill on a Thursday, and she had to go to the Chapel Hill Carborough Public Schools on Monday. She knew nothing of the language or the culture. She didn't know that all the kids would not crowd around one desk. She did not know that each student would have his or her own desk. She did not know about lining up, and she couldn't understand one word of what was being said in any case. When it got to be midday and the other students were getting excited and started lining up, she had no idea what was going on, but followed along. Then she said, "I smelled the food and I saw the cafeteria line and also the cash register. We came from Burma with nothing. We had no money, and I realized that at the end of the line, you either had to have a number or you had to have money. So I froze and I didn't take any food. Fortunately, someone intervened and fixed Christina a tray and waved past the cashier. I told Christine that it was hard for me to imagine how someone could get through that experience. She said, as she did in her story of transformation here at this church, that she carried her Bible with her in her backpack every day to give her confidence. Many of you know Christine. She will be married here next weekend. She was the ever-present interpreter, as she did not stay in the hard-won comfort of her new home, but continually went out to help smooth the way for other arriving and disoriented Karen people. An accomplished young woman, she now tutors those who have come after her in chemistry and math. She also leads her Karen youth group. One of the gifts that they gave her at the shower, when I went into the shower, one of the Karen women leaned over and she said, "What's a shower?" So Flicka Bateman came up with a way that they could participate. So they each had a 3x5 card, and they wrote on it a memory that they had of Christine. Almost every card had a testimony to the power and inspiration of Christine's faith, how she had encouraged them, how she gave them confidence to face all the difficulties of adjusting to life here. When I asked her for permission to share her story this morning, she said, "Of course, whatever I can do to help, I am nothing without these blessings from God." Our lessons in Matthew help us see that we are not here to sink our roots into a fixed sense of home. Rather, we are to grow that home inside, from the inside out, a home that goes with us wherever we go, a home big enough for our living Lord and for all whom he is seeking. This is the place from where the confidence of faith springs. Donna Scopper writes that failure is a building block in the spiritual home. Remember the church that failed at first to vote to be open and affirming? That became the building block for the door opened wide 3 years later. We start our building usually in a bit of rubble, in the awareness that we are not home yet, despite all outward appearances. I think that building, the inner house with many mansions, looks like a home renovation. We don't start with a tabla rasa. And it's okay to think of spiritual deepening as looking at a structure that no longer serves the growing family of God. There are stained ceiling tiles and cracked drywall and doors that won't open big enough, limiting by sometimes toxic structures that we can't recognize without the help of spiritual friends. Part of this spiritual journey is coming home each night to the dusty mess, believing that someday it really will be a welcoming home. I want to give you an example. Over the past 15 years, our Southern Conference United Church of Christ has had such bruising battles that there is plenty of rubble to go around. And P.S., we're all Christians. You know, most of us are really passionate Christians, passionate about our brand of Christian commitment, thus all the fighting. There is rubble from that era in my life, and it seemed to me I had to start somewhere. One of those battered relationships called out to me. A friend whom I loved was barely speaking to me, and we had important work to do on a conference committee. So God provided an opportunity. If you ask, God will do that for you. God will provide the opportunity. So I asked him, "Are you my friend?" He didn't say anything. And then he said, "I guess that depends on what you mean by friend." I knew what he meant because we hadn't been friends for a good long time. Then I said, "Is there any way you could possibly feel friendly towards me again? Because I feel terrible about what has happened between us." More silence. A very long silence. And then he looked at me and said, "We're friends. And we are." Almost as painful as a home renovation, actually a good deal more painful, which is why most of us tolerate a trip to Home Depot a lot better than lunch with a former friend. Mature spirituality grows through these grand and awkward connections, and it appears at first like a dusty mess. We fear that if we get out that crowbar and start taking down the deteriorating wallboard, that we will discover something has built a nest back there that even God can't help us with. So we need prayer, and we need spiritual friends, and we need our gospel hope that there isn't anything behind that wallboard that God doesn't already know all about. Thus is the spiritual house made through strengthening these God-given connections. We will find that spiritual home when we find a friend, when we rebuild a relationship, when we start trusting and testing those God-given opportunities to connect, where both our homelessness and our home building are given over to God in faith that the great carpenter accompanies us still. As my Pennsylvanian friend says, you got to grow up, and you've got to grow big to make room for these things to live side by side. This is grown-up stuff. As we tend to these inner spiritual resources, we will discover that the key to our spiritual house is already in our pocket, and that the Lord of the mansion stands ready to provide the opportunities and the confidence so that we can turn that key. Really, we only need to ask. Whoever receives you receives me, he assures us, but first we must receive him. Let us pray.